This is episode 21 of Everyday Wellness, Talk Back to Your Anxiety, with Lynn Dutroux. I'm Dr. Kelly Donahue, a clinical health psychologist, here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, functional nutritionist and nurse practitioner. Let's get started. Welcome to Everyday Wellness. Wellness is the result of the decisions that you make every day. It's your mindset and the thoughts you believe. Wellness is the food you put in your body and the relationship you have with yourself and others. Wellness is your work and meaning. Join us on Everyday Wellness as we explore ways that you can choose wellness today.
We are live.
And I can't find the sheet. Okay, here we go. Hello, and welcome to Everyday Wellness. We're so excited to have with us today Lynn Dutroux. Lynn, aka Annie Anxiety, is the compassionate ass kicker. She has a passion for encouraging others to opt out of overwhelm, slap their self-doubt silly, and to stop waiting for the imposter police to show up at their door. She's been a student of human nature as long as she can remember and has a variety of experiences, including being an educator, school psychologist, motorcycle salesperson, and entrepreneur. When she grows up, Lynn hopes to be an inspiration for others to empower themselves and pursue their purpose. She is currently working toward that goal by owning a private practice in Frederick, Maryland, where she works with clients as a counselor and coach, specializing in encouraging clients to embrace their stress and anxiety as tools they can use to grow and expand. She also encourages helpers, healers, and creative entrepreneurs to talk back to their doubts and fears, and she is their accountability partner in being the business beacons they were born to be. You can find out more about Lynn either at AnnieAnxiety.com or TheCompassionateAssKicker.com. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on board. I loved looking through your website, and I just... being a individual who grew up in New Jersey, I just like being straightforward, and everything about your branding really appealed to me personally. So,
yeah, no bullshit here.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate that. I can totally appreciate that. You know, even as a Western medicine trained healthcare provider, I always tried to be as straightforward as I could be with my patients, and I think people really value that.
Yeah, I get that a lot. On a fairly frequent basis, I get people who may have worked with someone else who was maybe a little more traditionally trained, a little more guarded. And that's some of the stuff that people say to me is, I just appreciate that you're willing to say it to me straight. I appreciate that you're willing to self-disclose. It just makes me feel like you understand me and in a way that I haven't felt understood before.
Yeah, yeah. And so tell me, just how did you get interested in counseling and coaching and consulting? I know your focus is on anxiety, but I'd love to hear how that transpired.
So what's the short version of that story? I think I was, you know, well, I know that I was born to be this. I mean, even as a kid, everyone talked to me that, you know, they felt safe sharing things with me. So I always got, oh, you're such a good listener, you know. But I fought that. I fought that a lot. So I graduated from high school, was the first in my family to go to college, and so trying to navigate all that. And my parents really wanted me to take over their business, which was motorcycle sales, motorcycles and power equipment. So I tried really hard not to do that either, but I didn't take a psychology class until, I guess it was my second semester, but then I was hooked at that point. And, but even then, I tried not to be a therapist. I think I was afraid. I was afraid to actually, I guess I knew that I was pretty empathic, and I was afraid to take on other people's stuff. So I danced around it by, I got my master's degree. Well, I tried education first. So, I loved psychology, but I got my certification in early childhood education, and then realized there was that just wasn't going to work. I didn't get hired. It was this whole anxiety provoking thing of going to all these interviews and not getting hired. And eventually I decided to use a psychology degree and ultimately went for my master's in clinical psychology, actually, to start with. I thought, well, I can test people, like I can handle that, and, you know, just write reports and still be very sort of disconnected, I guess. I was really afraid of, I guess what Brené Brown would talk about, that vulnerability piece. Mm-hmm. So I relate to her a lot because, you know, she does the research and, you know, really didn't want to find that vulnerability was the key to all of this. You know, sometimes I feel like we're kindred spirits that way because I fought being a therapist for so mm-hmm. long. I went back, I had, you know, the clinical degree, I worked as a school psychologist for a number of years, but I just couldn't get around it because no matter what I did, people still just wanted to talk to me and share things. And so at some point I just kind of allowed it to evolve and got my license. I don't even know when it was anymore, but did a number of different things. At that point, I left the school system. I was working selling motorcycles with my parents.
Wow.
And in the meantime, just trying to start a private practice and trying to navigate all that. And so I did go back to an agency at some point to kind of get my feet wet in all of this. And then at some point, I just couldn't stand the agency. I guess growing up with parents who owned their own business, it was always kind of challenging for me to work within a system. Started out, I was just a generalist in the beginning, and then I hired a business coach. This is the funny story that I tell. So I had gone to a workshop on anxiety by Reed Wilson. Someone had brought him here to Frederick, and I just loved Reed. I loved how he approached anxiety. I thought, this is, you know, if I were going to work with anxious clients, this is what I would want to do, because he was like, kind of no bullshit. You got to understand that anxiety is telling you that the most important things are to be comfortable and to be certain. And you got to talk back to that. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. Plus two, the funny story there is, my husband was driving past where we were, and he's texting me. He's like, oh, you know, how's it going? I'm like, it's great. The presenter just said fuck. And he was like, he didn't even know how to respond to that. But I was like, you know, I was all into this. And then he's like, well, wave to me. And I'm like, well, hell no, I'm not going to wave to you, because, you know, the presenter's already made it clear that if any of us ask stupid questions, like, he's going to make an example out of us. So, you know, that had really resonated so much with me. And then several months later, I hired this business coach, and I had been racking my brain, like, what's my niche going to be? What's my niche? What's my niche? And she just had this presence, and she said, well, who do you like to work with? And I didn't even hesitate. I said, people with anxiety. And then I followed it with a but. But every therapist out there has, you know, that they work with anxiety on their Psychology Today or their business card or whatever. And she just gave me this look, you know, how people cock their head and kind of look at you when they're like, did you hear what you just said? And she's like, but that's because everybody has it. And I was like, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, like the sperm and the egg just met, like anti-anxiety is born. So, yeah, so that's how it all started. And then, you know, it was just this journey of, you know, getting my hands on everything that I could about anxiety, plus just really sitting with my clients, because I had started to notice that that's who I attracted. I attracted clients who are intelligent, and, you know, they think a lot. That's one of my jokes is, you know, a great thing about working with anxious clients is they think a lot, and the challenge to working with anxious clients is they think a lot.
It's so true.
So that's how it all got started, and I just have been growing and evolving, for the, like, 4 or 5 years since then.
Okay, so you mentioned that anxiety sort of this passion of yours, and I'm wondering mm-hmm. if that's because you mentioned times when you felt a little anxious on your own journey. Did you resonate with that, and was that something that made you want to work with these anxious clients?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to call me on this, aren't you?
A little bit.
So, yeah. So, as a child, so I'm the firstborn, I would say both of my parents had some level of anxiety, you know, themselves, not maybe diagnosable, but my mom in particular. So I was kind of a clingy, clingy to her when we would be out in public. I didn't like crowds or anything, but I loved school, except for that, the first day of first grade. It was this whole funny situation. I think what happened to us made them do that thing where, like, you had to sit with your class and, like, there had to be an adult with you to monitor you, because they kind of let us go into the cafeteria and just sit wherever. And so this group of us just sat in the cafeteria through, like, all the lunch shifts. We missed the cue to, like, go out on the playground or something. And somehow or other, I internalized that as I had done something wrong and I wasn't going back to school. That was not going to happen. And my mom had to basically drag me to school kicking and screaming. So I guess you could call it separation anxiety, plus probably a perfectionist bent in there. And that was the first that I remember dealing with anxiety. But it would rear its head, periodically throughout my life. I actually remember... I guess it was right after I graduated from undergraduate in college and couldn't quite figure out what I was doing. And I remember telling my doctor, I was like, I think I have anxiety and depression. They're like balancing each other out. Like, one wakes me up in the morning and the other one makes me go to bed at night. I don't know. I'm not sure what to do with it. Definitely that informs. And I think it's what makes me good at what I do, is because I can relate, to clients. I can relate to panic attacks, maybe I don't have it full blown or those sorts of things, but I certainly have had my share and done my work. And that's what I share with a lot of clients, is, you know, how things were when I started versus how they are now.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, I think it probably provides... For your clients and patients that you work with, to know that you have experienced some of these same things yourself, mm-hmm. probably provides them tremendous reassurance.
Yeah, it does. I think it helps them to feel not alone. It helps them to feel like I understand where they're coming from.
So I think we all have a basic understanding of what anxiety is, but I think that it probably means a little bit something different to everyone too. So can you give us mm-hmm. sort of your definition of anxiety and what it looks like when it shows up in a person's life?
Yeah. So instead of like a textbook, I'm gonna share what I would share with clients is that...
I've been using Mitapure for the last 2 years, and I've added this to my routine for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a foundational supplement for me and my family. It keeps things simple, and I know that I cannot get enough of urolithin A in my food to derive the same benefits. And if you're not familiarized with urolithin A, it's a signaling molecule, but it's also actively involved in anti-aging, energy production. And I take Timeline because of its remarkable healthy aging solution that activates key critical cellular pathways in my body. It's a total game changer for healthy aging. I alternate between using the soft gels and powder, depending on whether or not I'm traveling. And we know that restoring cellular energy is a key to enduring health. And this is concluded in a recent publication in Nature Metabolism, which is a top scientific journal, identifying that newly energized cells may provide many more years of healthy life to people. Yet as we age, we know that cellular energy production naturally declines and reduces our prospects of optimal health and longevity. That's the great thing about Timeline, is you can restore cellular energy and support healthy aging. I've noticed the biggest improvements in my energy and sleep levels. We know that Timeline is clinically shown to give our cellular energy generators, the mitochondria, new power. And when taken daily, it replaces aging mitochondria, so it upregulates mitophagy and rebuilds new ones, or mitogenesis. Timeline is the only nutrient that can do what it does. So Timeline renews your cells to a more powerful state. My listeners can get 10% off your first order at timeline.com/Cynthia. That's 10% off at timeline.com/Cynthia. I know you're going to love this product. Weight gain is one of many symptoms that our hormones are in decline, especially as we navigate perimenopause into menopause. Dr. Anna, who is a great friend of mine, is an OBGYN who's treated thousands of women just like you and I who experience increasing dryness and even pain in the bedroom as they get older. Jolva is the solution Dr. Anna formulated for her own clients, and it has since been loved by over 100,000 women. It's a feminine cream with DHEA that helps the body regenerate moisture from the inside out. 92.8% of Jolva users experienced a significant improvement in the first 4 to 8 weeks. Get 10% off your first purchase of Jolva by using the link dranna.com/Cynthia. That's DrAnna.com, Cynthia, and get 10% off your first purchase.
You know, I give them the whole background of how, you know, our protective system, the amygdala, you know, sends, well, our senses sense that something might be dangerous. Our amygdala sends the alert that sends the blood to our body to fight, flee, or freeze, you know, that whole system. And that for a lot of us, when that happens, it'll, you know, it resets when we realize it's not, and we're not dying, you know, our system resets. But for people who tend to be sensitive with anxiety, the system doesn't reset as quickly. And we oftentimes are doing things where either, we have a hair trigger. I used to talk to people about how, you know, when I was a kid, the technology was not as advanced, and our smoke detectors would go off if there was like hot steam from the shower. Like we opened the bathroom door back in those days when you didn't have fans in your bathroom. You know, I'd set the smoke detector off with the hot steam that would come out. And so for some people, that's how their system is set up. You know, it's just has that hair trigger. And then what'll happen is over time, we don't like that feeling, so then we have the part of our brain that starts talking to us and telling us to avoid things. You know, oh, you don't want to feel that way, so avoid doing that thing. And so the way I describe it to people is anxiety is sort of a protector. Its job is to protect you from danger, from death, you know, but the problem is it overdoes its job. It's, you know, it's like a border collie. You know, if you think of like, so like sheepdogs and like German shepherds, if they're watching the sheep, they kind of like sit back and they, you know, they just kind of let them go and do, and they scan, you know, everything. But like border collies are like, no, everybody must stay in this area. And it just runs around in circles and circles, because in some levels it feels like that makes its job easier. So what I explain to people is that, you know, anxiety is trying to do its job. And by telling you, you know, that that's dangerous or don't do that, or, you know, creating the panic attack or whatever, it's just its way of saying, hey, I need to make my job easier. So I'm going to make you, really uncomfortable so that you don't go do any of these dangerous things, even if what's saying is dangerous is, you know, like talking to somebody.
And so, you know, I when I was looking at your website, there was a lot about your approach that really appeals to me. But I would imagine that people that are listening may be unfamiliar with how you actually treat or address anxiety and how it makes you different or unique compared to, and I don't want to make a generalization, to a more traditional perspective and treatment for anxiety.
I actually got to just explain this yesterday. I had a new client come in, and I think a lot of people would think that the way to deal with anxiety is to control it, is to manage it, is to learn to meditate or learn to breathe or, you know, any number of techniques that are absolutely valid. And you know, I'm not bashing anything. I think, you know, all of those things have their place. However, I go in at a deeper level. If people don't understand how their anxiety works and they don't learn how to thank the protector, but basically say, you know, I appreciate what you're saying and what you're doing, but I have to figure this out. I have to be willing to be uncomfortable. I have to recognize that this illusion that we have created as a culture that we can be certain and make sure about things is just that. It's an illusion. And that at some point we have to be willing to take risks and embrace being uncomfortable in order to actually live. Because otherwise we're just sitting in, you know, a bubble hoping that nothing bad happens. So I teach people to play the what if game and win instead of letting anxiety win. You know, so if your anxiety is saying, well, what if this thing happens? You say, well, so what? If that thing happens, then I'll do this. So teaching people that they're actually much more competent than what anxiety leads them to believe. And that if something happens, that they're going to be able, they might not like it, they don't have to like it, but that they can figure out what to do with it.
I think that idea of teaching people that they will be uncomfortable and that being mm-hmm. uncomfortable is okay is so needed, but it's so foreign because what do a lot of people do when they're uncomfortable? We like find ways to distract ourselves.
We false comfort. I even hit my husband up this morning because he was going to he's a contractor and he was going to an all day, it was 2 day like conference workshop thing, which is completely out of his norm. And so, you know, he was running all the what ifs and everything. And he calls me after he's there and he's like, yeah, I was like the second person registered. There's still people coming in. I was feeling kind of nervous. So I went and bought some books at the bookseller. I was like, honey, you're false comforting.
False comforting.
But that's how I explain it to people is that what will happen is we get this spike, this feeling that we call anxiety. It's uncomfortable. And what we are conditioned to do is find either a thought or a behavior or a thing that will comfort us so we feel better. But what we don't recognize is it's just going to spike again. So we're doing this dance of, you know, I have this anxious thought and then I do this thing, you know, and at its highest level, that's obsessive compulsive disorder. I have this, you know, this thought and now I have to do this thing so that nothing bad happens. But if we continue to do the thing, you know, in any manner, you know, from buying a book to you know, washing our hands obsessively, it's still false comfort. It's still us, you know, it's still us telling ourselves that that's going to make us feel better. And then it's just going to turn around and happen again. So if we allow ourselves to lean into the discomfort, it's going to go away on its own. I have yet to have a client come in who is still in a panic attack that never ended. Right? I mean, it's uncomfortable, but it always ends. The thought always, you know, eventually. And so when we when we're willing to, are you guys still there?
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, my computer's doing something weird. Okay. When we're willing to lean into that discomfort, then we stop that cycle. We get to be in charge. The way I describe it to people is that we've spent our lives having somebody else tell us what to do and be responsible. And so we're kind of looking for that. And anxiety steps up and goes, I'll do it. I'll be in charge. I'll tell you what to do. And we have to recognize that we have to step in. Our core self knows what to do. We just don't trust it because it doesn't speak up enough. The anxiety, you know, jumps around and, you know, it's like histrionic and wants all the attention.
It's so, sort of like talking through the megaphone, right? And your inner voice is like the whisper.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think this avoidance of discomfort shows up in other ways too. Like, oh, let me just go eat a whole bunch of stuff so that I don't feel this, or let me drink stuff, or let me shop or whatever.
Oh yeah. And absolutely.
And I think sometimes people don't even realize that that's anxiety. Do you see mm-hmm. a lot of that?
I do. It's funny what people will show up and say, you know, it took me this long to figure out, you know, and somebody else had to point it out that this might actually be anxiety. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not surprised because we use all these false comforts. So we don't even recognize that who's driving that train and, you know, why we're doing that.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned panic attacks won't last forever. What tools do you give people to help them manage that discomfort?
So with panic attacks in particular, what I suggest to them is you know, it isn't going to last forever. And so lean into it. And lean into it means things like take your pulse and sort of talk back and say, really, like 120, like that's all you got? Can you go ahead and make it race faster so we can get this over? I got shit to do. So that type of talk. And as you haven't figured out, humor is a huge part of this. We have to use the humor in order to, because otherwise what anxious people tend to do is be way too intense, and that just feeds anxiety. So by using the humor and really, you know, encouraging them to lean in, I actually encourage people to seek out situations that are uncomfortable in order to practice this. So yeah, those are some of the things specific to like panic. Other things that I like to recommend to people are to have what I call a dump journal. For me, I do it in the morning, but it's the first thing that I do. And I take a, you know, like a, the ugliest notebook that you can find. So like I go and get those composition books. I usually stock up when they're on sale at the beginning of the school year. And I get the wide ruled ones because I don't want to write small. Like I want to be able to write big. I take the ugliest pens out of my pack of colored pens, the ones that I don't like, and they sit there. And in the morning when I get up, I dump all my shit in it. That's where anything I'm worried about, anything that is, you know, upsetting me or creating anything or could create drama later in the day, it gets dumped in that journal and then it gets left there. And I go on about my day. So that's another tool that I offer to most clients to find a way, you know, on a pretty regular basis, if not every day, to just dump all that stuff in there. Because it's amazing when you start writing it down how quickly you're able to recognize, oh, well, if this actually happened, this is what I would do. You know, oh, that's not as big of a deal as I thought it was.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
That worst case scenario suddenly looks manageable.
Yes.
Well, and I think that's so important, that distinction that, you know, you are in control, because I'm not a therapist, I'm not a counselor, but, you know, just in my NP world and even, you know, working with clients and nutritional therapy, it's amazing to me how, as you've stated, they give the anxiety the power and they, and once they take it back, I know even for myself, you know, depending on where I am in my cycle or what's going on in my crazy existence, my own coach started encouraging me. She was like, I know you hate writing it down, but you got to write it down, get it out, you know, you know, give it, you know, stop giving it so much energy. And so I completely believe wholeheartedly in the message that you're sending. And what a interesting departure from more, when I use the word traditional, I'm thinking more from a Western medicine perspective of how many of my patients were on benzodiazepines, Valium, Ativan, you know, Xanax, and everyone thinks all those things are so benign, and they really aren't because they have abuse and tolerance potential, or these long-term anti-anxiety agents. I'm like, why don't we look deeper? Why aren't we dealing with behavioral therapy? Why aren't we looking at what you're eating?
Have you guys heard about a bioactive whole food on the market with 5,000 published research studies backing it? When my oldest son needed to go on antibiotics a few months ago, I discovered Armra colostrum, and the benefits for him and his recovery from being on antibiotics have been instrumental in me now recommending this to my dairy non-sensitive patients and clients. Armra's colostrum strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness, performance, and recovery. My son has mentioned to me over and over again how great his gut feels, how he has improved his digestion and gut function as well. Colostrum is a rich, exclusive source of immunoglobulins or antibodies that optimize our immune defense even during cold and flu season. And we know that mucosal barriers house over 80% of our body's immune cells, including the antibodies IgG and SIgA. And these immunoglobulins bind and intercept harmful particles like viruses, bacteria, and toxins, blocking them from crossing into the barriers into our bloodstream. And Armra's colostrum contains the highest levels of SIgA and IgG to ensure your most fortified first line of protection. It's sustainably sourced, and it's important to know that you want to mix colostrum only with cold liquids or foods, or dry scoop it into your mouth mouth. This is also great for the oral microbiome. And we've worked out a special offer for my Everyday Wellness community where you can receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/Cynthia15 or enter Cynthia15 to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/Cynthia15. You definitely want to check it out. Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe-easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible.
Yes, and that's exactly. And I do. I mean, I still have clients that, you know, are on some medications, although not the benzos. I really, encourage them to, if they come to me on those, I encourage them to, you know, get off if they can. But exactly what you're talking about, diet and lots of different things. And some clients, you know, again, like, you're not the therapist, I'm not the nutritional person, so I have to step lightly there. But that's where I love having resources. And I, you know, I frequently encourage clients to work with even a psychiatrist that I'm friends with who I'm so excited. I can't believe it took her this long, but she's doing a certification that has to do with diet, you know, in treating different disorders and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what I encourage my clients to do is like, okay, we can do this part of it, but there's so many other parts that are contributing, even down to, I know a lot of therapists will, the thing now is like to have coffee and tea and stuff to offer. And it's like, I have tea, it's decaf. I'm not going to offer you coffee because anxious people just don't need it. Like, we just don't need that caffeine.
We don't need the stimulation.
We don't need the stimulation. You know, you can work your way back to that if you have to, or, you know, something. But, you know, there's just so many things that you can do to support this that you, and you, without the medications. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that.
Well, I just, I don't want to belabor the point, but one of the things that I found profoundly disheartening was, you know, particular populations had been on Valium, Xanax, Ativan for 20, 30 plus years.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I'm looking at them in their 70s or 80s, and I'm explaining to them for the very first time they're hearing, you understand that you cannot abruptly stop this medication. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their eyes are getting big and they're like, is that why I have to keep using more and more of it? Yeah. Yes. And so there has to be a better way. There's certainly in an acute situation, if it's something in a hospital, if someone needs to use something acutely for a short term use, that's very different. But, the lack of education was really profoundly disheartening for me. So I'm glad to know there are people doing work like this that is far more valuable than just prescribing meds.
Yeah, well, that's what, and that's, I get that a lot. I get folks who, you know, I've had clients who spent years having every test done and trying different medications, you know, and then their doctor's finally like, look, this is anxiety and you have got to deal with it. You've got to figure it out. And, you know, in a lot of cases, they're able to, at the very least, decrease their meds, if not get off of them completely, when they start dealing at what's really going on and understanding it better and having that willingness. Because I do have clients who understand what I'm saying to them, but it's a little harder to get to that willingness to be uncomfortable. That's, you know, that's definitely more of a challenge. And yet that's when they really start making progress in all of this.
I can imagine.
We've been talking a lot to our guests about social media and its influence. Do you feel like, do you feel like social media has an influence on anxiety? And two, do you feel like it's increasing anxiety potentially?
Yeah, I do. I think like anything else, social media could be a great tool. I think it's taught us a lot. I am on it. And I encourage my clients, if it's an issue, that we have to back off of it. We have to look at it in a more realistic manner. And it's just like anything else, social media, news, all of that. I encourage my clients to just turn it all off if they can, or build some sort of a structure for when they're on there. Along with the education of, you do realize that, you know, you're seeing people's highlight reel and this is not everything that's going on with them. And so I do it on a case by case basis, depending on if they're coming to me, you know, talking about it, then we deal with it. And like I deal with everything else, I hit it head on. So I have no problem saying to people, stop it. Don't do that. Well, and then really, helping them figure out how to stop.
Yeah, I know. It's an enormous problem, I think, even for people that don't have a propensity for anxiety. Because I see, even within the female entrepreneur space, you know, that comparison is the thief of joy, which is what I spout to myself. You're right that everyone shows their highlights in every area of their lives. They're going to show the best picture, the best lighting, the best photo of their kids, the best, you know, they aren't necessarily always being real and relatable. And so that makes it harder for people to understand that it's not as perfect as it looks.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the reasons that I make a point of looking ridiculous on my social media on a regular basis. What's that?
I so love that about you.
Well, yeah. So because I feel like somebody's got to be real. Somebody's got to put an example out there that, you know, this is all of it, you know. So, yeah, you might not get my worst moments, but I have no problem, like, taking a picture of myself with smoothie on my face and realize, you know, after I realized that I just talked to my landlord for 10 minutes and he didn't bother to tell me, you know, or other things, making faces, you know, not having makeup on, you know, all of those things, because I do think the more of us who are willing to do that, then the more examples we have to show people, hey, you know, it's not always sunshine and roses and rainbows and unicorns and whatever.
But I think that's so important. I think there are a lot of people who are suffering probably privately because just, you know, maybe they aren't realizing how destructive those images can be. I know that, you know, certainly when my kids were younger, it's interesting, a photo popped up on Facebook today from 10 years ago. And so my kids are now 11 and 13. And I was not nearly as interested in social media 10 years ago. I mean, now my business drives a lot of that interaction. But when I think about these very young, very impressionable young women, as an example, people, maybe they have just had a baby, they're postpartum, maybe they're a little depressed, and they're seeing these crazy celebrities that look like they just walked out of off of a runway, and how destructive that can be on so many levels. Or people who look like they've got it all together, when my great thing that I know Kelly and I talk about, sometimes people that look like they've got it together are the ones that don't. They just don't show that.
And that would be probably where, like, for me, the coaching aspect of what I do comes in. And even if I'm doing counseling, like, if somebody has a diagnosable disorder and comes to see me, you know, I am a licensed counselor. But even in those sessions, you know, coaching informs that as well when it's called for. And then I do have clients that are just coaching clients, and I do groups that are coaching groups. And the reason that I have no hesitation doing that is that, you know, I'm going to tell somebody, like, you know, this is how it is. And so and how are we going to sit down and schedule this out? Like, that's where somebody traditionally is going to be like, you know, how do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to, we're past that. Let's take some action steps. Let's actually figure out, you know, maybe stop following the celebrities and use this for actually connecting with people who are dealing with the same things that you're dealing with. You know, let's find you a group on here, and let's find you a group that's not like shaming, you know, mm-hmm. and those sorts of things. So
it's so practical and seemingly like so simple, but it's just those things mm-hmm. that I think we don't think of, especially when we're in these throes of anxiety. It's just mm-hmm. you kind of get these blinders on it. You can't see. Maybe I should talk to someone.
And that's the challenging part, is that the one thing, you know, that this virtual world that we've connected to, you know, I think, again, there are a lot of pieces of it that I think, you know, even just by being able to provide people with treatment who live in rural areas and that sort of stuff. I mean, there's definitely, it's a tool if we use it as a tool, but we have to, because all of it's so new, we have to recognize that it is also disconnecting us and making people feel lonely and not knowing what to do with it. So the more we talk about it and put it out there and encourage people to, you know, to talk to somebody, you know, my groups, it's, you know, it's almost harder to get people into a group when they have anxiety than it is to herd cats. But when I've stuck to it and done it, it's amazing when people are like, oh my God, like, I recognize that there's a lot of about us that's different, but this whole thing around anxiety, like, I hear what you're saying, and it makes me feel better to know I'm not alone and mm-hmm. to hear what other people's experiences are. And so I commit to these groups, even though sometimes the marketing and getting the people in the door is challenging.
Oh, I'm sure.
I love sitting in the group and being present to these folks who are sharing, being vulnerable, connecting to other people, and practicing all of that. It's pretty awesome. I feel honored to be able to do that.
That's so cool.
That is so cool. So one of the questions we ask all of our podcast interviewees is, what are two things that our listeners can do to improve their wellness every day?
I think some of the things that we mentioned, the journaling, that's my number one, is to, you know, have a place where you can dump all of your crap each day. And for me, it works to do it first thing in the morning. Somebody else, might be before they go to bed. The only thing that I suggest to people is to just be aware. Like, if you're doing it before you go to bed and it's creating things for you to ruminate on, then do it in the morning. You know, carve out. And it doesn't, I'm not talking about like page after page. I require myself to do one page. Mm-hmm. If I do more than that, it's great. But just one thing, you know, one page of stuff. And the other is turn the news off.
Yeah. You know?
Turn the news off. And work on doing things that are uncomfortable. You know, I have a quote here. I think it's Eleanor Roosevelt: "Do one thing every day that scares you."
Yeah, that's a favorite for mm-hmm. sure, mm-hmm. without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, Lynn, we want people to know how they can get in touch with you. So can you tell us where they can find you and what kind of people you want to work with, other than people who just have anxiety? We know that.
Sure. So my counseling and, I guess you would call it, life coaching page, you can get me at antianxiety.com, and it's A-U-N-T-I-E, anxiety, A-N-X-I-E-T-Y.com. And if you're looking for, so that's where, I mean, I do counseling and coaching for what I say, you know, highly intelligent, you know, oftentimes my clients are kind of type A, overthinkers, avoidant. For the most part, they're fully functional, you know, so some worried well aspect to things. Mm-hmm. But I certainly do. I certainly work with clients who have OCD and who have panic disorder, all of that. But also folks that maybe, you know, are more what we would call in the field adjustment disorder. And maybe coaching is a, you know, a an area that it would be helpful for them to, around how to get past the anxiety, how to talk to it, and, you know, get on with their business or whatever's going on with them. And then the business specific website is the compassionateasskicker.com. And that's where I think you had said in the beginning, I work with helpers, healers, and creative entrepreneurs. I do individual sessions as well as I do run a business coaching group that meets bi-monthly or bi-weekly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom, knowledge, and we love your approach. And we're so excited for others to hear about it too. Thanks.
Oh, great.
Well, because I think that there are so many people who have a desire to probably work with someone, but they just have these images mm-hmm. that, you know, might be portrayed in the media. So they don't really mm-hmm. have a realistic perspective of what working with someone might be like. And if I were suffering from something like this, you'd be the kind of person I want to come see.
Well, I welcome anybody who is looking for something different. Again, I think you can get a flavor of me from my websites, as well as I do offer folks a 30-minute phone call to discover whether or not we would be a good fit. So there's that too.
Perfect. Well, thank you again for carving a little bit of time out of your morning to speak with us.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can find out more about Cynthia and her work at chtwellness.com. And you can find out more about Kelly and her work at everydaytherapist.com. In addition, if you have questions for us or topics you'd like us to address, please email us at everydaywellnesspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.